Steven Brooks of 24/7 Sports. That's right. Not just friend of the program, elite, close, personal family friend of the program. We're going to talk spring ball. We're going to talk football. The Saeed Khalif news might get into some basketball. You guys know what it is. We'll get into it.
You are Locked On Spartans, your daily podcast on the Michigan State Spartans. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Spartan friends, Spartan family, Locked On Spartans listeners, thank you so much for tuning in to Locked On Spartans, your team in green and white 5 days a week, even if it's the offseason for football and basketball. And with that said, after working his you-know-what off, after a football season and a basketball season, and after chasing every last call in the city that they call the Big Apple, we got Steven Brooks here. We said, hey, let's just keep beating the brakes off you. Let's give you no days off. Thank you for joining us, Steven. How on earth are you doing, my man?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm happy to be home for now and everything, but like I was just saying to some other folks, by Thursday or Friday, I'm going to wish I was in Houston, you know, and sort of getting ready for all that. Not to, you know, open any wounds or anything, but I mean, I think there's many scenarios where Michigan State is getting ready for Houston and is heading down there and playing in a Final Four. And so, especially I think after Saturday and Sunday's games, I'd be curious to hear from folks about how different they – I mean, obviously the night of the game, you're disappointed in itself, but then when you see how the road plays out with FAU, with SDSU, and just all these other teams. So I'd be curious to see how much different the mood even shifted after a couple – you know, in the 48 hours after the loss. But, yeah, no, I'm happy to be home for now. We got football. We'll jet through that, honestly, and then it'll be summer, and I'm going to get married, and then I'm not going to be talking to you or worrying about any of this garbage. I'm going to be busy for a while.
Just big moves. Yeah, you have no offseason coming up in life for you over there. But, I mean, from the fan side of things, I'll do the worst thing, and I'll just speak for everyone here. Like, I took a lot of solace in FAU going to the Final Four. Like, if it was Kansas State getting on that jet to Houston, I'm not smiling. Like, I'm going to be a broken person for this entire week. But the fact that it was the Owls in there, and, you know, it's a little easier to see them go in instead of the team that you just barely lost to, and that you don't have to plug yourself in that scenario. But I digress. Mm-hmm. Also, what's going to help heal the wounds is just punting basketball talk down the line here for another like 20-ish minutes, because we got to get to the big football news. We touched a little bit on it yesterday, but it was your organization that broke the news that they will not be extending the contract of Saeed Khalif. He was the general manager, director of player personnel, chief of exotic rental cars. He had a few titles in his short time here at Michigan State. But how do you read this whole situation? Like, is this a step forward for Michigan State, in your opinion here?
I think it's, I guess, an opportunity, you know, to sort of, you know, to reassess everything and maybe take a new direction with some things, you know. So Saeed was brought in primarily originally as a recruiter, and that's where he built his name and resume and everything at Wisconsin. Of course, people might remember, I mean, when he was in charge over there, they signed their best classes basically ever at school history. They sort of changed their strategy a little bit and you know, to sort of put their big boy pants on and said, hey, let's go try to get good players. You know, let's not just get the easy ones that fall in our lap here. Let's go get into some fights for some top level talent. And, you know, that was obviously an appealing thing. So he came over here, and pretty quickly, I think he took on a lot of things that were more than just recruiting focus, you know, in terms of, like, program marketing and presentation, branding, you know, identity, just sort of fan-focused stuff, you know, outward-looking things, not just about building the roster or this recruit, that recruit, or this class, that class, but like I said, like, branding things, social media and all that, even. I believe all those guys, you know, the creatives and everything fell under his purview eventually once he became not just a director of player personnel or, you know, the related title, whatever exactly it was. Once he became general manager, a whole lot more came under game day experience, you know, all these other things. And I think, I think it was probably too much for one guy to do. And B, I think it probably lost a bit of focus on the recruiting end specifically. So, you know, he did do what what he did at Wisconsin in that sense, right? And I think that part was successful in terms of, well, I don't know if successful, I guess, is the right word, but the plan was enacted as it went, you know, as they planned, I guess, in terms of look at the kids who were on campus last year. All those, it was 4- and 5-star bonanza, the cars and everything, and like all that stuff was like cool, and like that stuff you got to do, and like they're kind of ahead of the curve on a lot of that stuff. I'd say the photo shoots, all that stuff for the official visitors, but the actual the players that were coming in, I mean, 2 or 3 signed with the program, you know, and you know,
not a lot actually,
during those 4 or 5 weekends or whatever it is. So you had to ask yourself. Now, look, you could definitely argue this both ways. I mean, we were coming off 11-2 and a Peach Bowl win, and everybody was riding high, and you couldn't tell them anything wrong, you know. Then why not strike while the iron's hot, right? Why not try to skip a step? But in the end, that is kind of how it played out. And then once you have, you know, 3 more months after the glitzy dog and pony show and everything, and then you have some more football out there, and some of that football evidence isn't really great necessarily. In terms of last season, then you end up in a tough spot where, like, man, that summer hype did not match the production of the fall. So there was that element. And so you don't want to fault them, I don't think, for trying to get good players, of course. But there was always an element of, like, is this really realistic? You know, that your official visitor spots are limited. You can only bring in, I think, 60-something, maybe it's 80-something. Maybe lower than that. But you can only have so many official visitors that you pay for, 2-day deal, red carpet, all that. And so it was always like, oh, man, like, all right, 5-star such and such, like Harold Perkins or whatever. I don't even know if he came up or one, but he was always in that discussion. But, you know, 5-star such and such from Texas, never been here before, let's bring him up. All right, he left, never heard from him again. You know, so was that really a good use of one of those spots? I don't know. So all that to say, especially now, where they're, you know, there's no way they could have last summer, this upcoming summer now, I would say, you know, because I think a lot of those kids, that shine has dulled a little bit. You know, they're not coming off 11-2. They're no longer like this brand new staff. They're actually in year 4 now with a lot of, you know, a lot of data behind them. So I think it's an opportunity to reset maybe and maybe get a little bit more grounded in reality, try not to skip a step in the recruiting realm as they were doing and almost pulled off to their credit. But
yeah,
I do think they have to sort of be a little bit more realistic about the targets that this program can hit right now and worry about development as well. You know, whenever you get these guys, develop them. Now, you're not going to get a lot of just add water and stir type of players, if you can say, at this stage. Maybe that'll change. But that's really the main thing, I think, is it allows them an opportunity to maybe reset their strategy, just reevaluate everything that they're doing, from these guys recruiting enough, recruiting the right way, the right places, the right kinds of players, all that stuff. I think the recruiting office itself will take a pretty big, you know, turnover, see a lot of turnover, a refresher type of deal there. And yeah, so whether it's to your original point, I've said a lot here, but I don't think it was just, I can say this, it wasn't strictly performance-based, I guess I'll say that, you know, it was a situation where Tucker came in and said, you're not doing the job right, get out. There's more to it than that. I can't really say a whole bunch about it, but there's more to it than that.
Sure. Gotcha. There is one take that I had on the whole thing yesterday that I want to get to in a hot second, but this is what we call in the podcast industry a tease here, Steven. So I'm going to put you on ice here, let you think about what could come out of my mouth next. But first, I just need to talk to people's ear off about FanDuel Sportsbook. That's right. It's America's number one sports book. And this has been a March Madness for the ages. If you have gotten on any of the action here, well, odds are you've paid off a pretty good bet here. If you bet either Miami make the Final Four, FAU, SDSU, there we go, nailed it, and UConn. Keep it rolling with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. And if you're a new customer, well, I got great news for you. It's even sweeter because new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's right. That is up to $1,000 back in bonus bets. If your first bet doesn't win, just go to FanDuel.com/lockedon to sign up today and claim your no-sweat first bet. You can wager on everything from the money line to point spreads, which team is going to be cutting down the nets. You could do the same game parlays. Those are always a hoot and a half. You combine player points, player rebounds, the money line, and, well, just make it rain on FanDuel. It's all in an app that's safe, secure, super easy to use, and my favorite part, You get paid quickly with FanDuel. You are not waiting around for days at a time, waiting for money to hit your account. Nope. When you withdraw from FanDuel, he's going to pay you as fast as he possibly can. So don't miss your shot at the no sweat first bet up to $1,000 when you join FanDuel today. Again, just go to FanDuel.com/lockdown to sign up. Make every moment more with FanDuel. And let's get the one, the only Steven Brooks of 24/7 Sports back in here. And just to continue the Saeed Khalif conversation here, and my big takeaway yesterday was, and this isn't inside information or anything, this is just gathering everything that I could from the last calendar year of Michigan State football. And I think if you were to make a pie chart of why they're going to go a different direction here, I think the biggest chunk possibly is, and you alluded to a lot of it in the first segment here, is that with these five-star and four-star kids, I think there may have been a lot of miscommunication or lack of clarity of how close MSU is actually to landing these guys. So they're allocating time and resources to getting guys that, hey, okay, well, if you say that we're second or that we could very well flip this guy, let's just try to go get him. When in reality, there was never an opportunity to flip these guys in the end. Is that fair, or is that maybe a little off the mark here, in your opinion?
I would say when it came to last year's cycle, the problem was, and again, I don't want to act like trying to get good players is a bad thing, like, because it's absolutely not. Yeah. That's what this program needs to do. And even just by shooting for the stars the way they did, you know, that built upon itself and gained them a little bit of publicity and notoriety. And, and it made, I think, other kids look and say, wow, what are they doing on that? Maybe I should go look too. You know, and that all semi-worked. And there was a lot of legitimate interest there. But the problem came when August, you know, was a very dry month. Like June and July were popping off the charts, and then August came and it got very dry. And then the season started, and things didn't start going well. And the pivot was not there, not nearly quick enough. Now, I think they did do an admirable job in that last 2 or 3 weeks. You know, they pick up Barberin, they pick up Sean Brown out of California, sort of a couple late pivot adds there. Found their way at receiver a little bit late with those two signees. But I didn't think that pivot came soon enough, you know, and I thought they could have given themselves more options, more flexibility, more time if they had been realistic with themselves instead of still being on this big game hunt too deep into the season, too deep into the fall. You know, after the summer, I feel like they should have sat down and said, all right, this guy's realistic, this guy isn't, this guy is, this guy, you know, and just look yourself in the mirror. I think that was a bit of an issue, was looking yourself in the mirror and saying, wow, are we really going to go all the way into, you know, the 10th round or whatever, into December with Alabama and LSU on this kid? You know, is that really going to be worth our time?
Tough.
Yeah, you got to figure that one out, you know? So that was my big issue. I was like, okay, guys, when's the strategy going to change here? Because everybody from the summer is either committed or isn't calling you back anymore. So what's going to happen here when it got down to, like, 12 kids there at one point, like late in the cycle, I want to say, or whatever.
Yeah.
A couple of decommitments. So I just didn't think they were fast enough to pivot and make something happen there. And I think that's a very valid criticism. You know, as much as you can have real discussions about the five-star chase and everything like that, but at the end of the day, you do want talent. But just once it was clear, I think to everybody that most of those guys were not coming, then you had to be very quick and swift and have a lot of plan Bs ready. And that'd be another thing, I guess I would say too.
Yep.
Is, you know, covering this, being around and everything, I don't think they cultivated plan Bs very well at all, much. So that left you really spinning and reeling. If you're late in the cycle, then you're talking about guys with one or two Power 5 offers that everyone's forgot about or none, you know, and maybe you're handing out a first offer to a kid late in the cycle as a senior, and that can get dicey. So those are the valid criticisms there. Now, I don't think it means as a whole they get a completely poor job or anything like that. I mean, they still did sign the second best class this program's ever had in the rankings era. You know, got very promising kids in the 2022 class who are now making their way through and everything. So I don't want to paint it as this overall failure by any means. As I said, it wasn't, you know, even primarily performance driven, but I do think there were some bumps along the way where you went, oh man, you know, they probably want to redo that thing.
Sure. Yeah, and that is a great point, too. Like, I think the lack of plan Bs, though, happens because you are chasing a kid that is also looking at Miami or Texas A&M, you know, teams that have a salary cap that rivals an NFL team. And, like, you know, you're not going to play that game as heavy as, you know, the Hurricanes are down south. Like, yeah, you got some NIL money, but Like, look, this is a losing battle to begin with. And by the time that you realize, uh-oh, Samson Okolola is not going to sign with us. Who's plan B? That's right. We never called them because we were too busy chasing. Oh, well, drats. Oh, well. So, yeah, again. But
yeah, like and, you know.
Still a fine class. Coming off a 5-7 season, still a fine class. But, yeah, there needs to be a change of strategy, if you will.
Yeah. And there's a couple other ones like I could tell you over a beer. But, you know, situations where MSU kind of got the short end of the stick, whether it was on communication or just an NIL deal at the last moment or whatever. But there were, you know, at least a handful of situations where the class would have ended up looking better than it was. And it was still a good class. Again, let me reiterate that. Still a good class this 2023 cycle, but could have even been better. But, you know, this thing or that thing changed at the last minute, or the communication was this thing and then it wasn't, type of deal where they could have had a couple more guys, I know for sure, that they were expecting to have.
Well, one day we will talk about Kedrick Riscano's commitment over a beer. But until then, let's talk about a guy that really hasn't gotten a lot of shine here on the podcast because, well, it has been full bore basketball season the last few weeks here. Jim Salgado. That's right. The 10th assistant opening was left there when Brandon Jordan went to the NFL. And Mel Tucker, in rather quick fashion, hired long-tenured defensive coach Jim Salgado. He comes here from Buffalo, spent his time at Princeton. Other than just that, the Wikipedia page of things, Steven, what do you know about Jim Salgado and what brought him here to sunny East Lansing?
Somebody that I believe, from what I've heard, Mel Tucker has had his eye on for a while. You know, even going back to building his original staff here, actually.
Wow.
Which is something I heard a little bit after the fact. So, Leslie Frazier is one of Tucker's, you know, top sort of mentors from the NFL. And He's been cited a lot, you know, when he's had openings like this. I think even with Brandon Jordan, he might have had a word in for him there, or maybe it was might have been Marco Coleman actually. But we've heard Leslie Frazier a handful of times when he's had hires to make, and it was, you know, same thing here with Jim Salgado. So on the surface, I was surprised that it was somebody of his profile. You know, I definitely thought a DB's coach made sense, and I very quickly heard like that's what it's going to be. And then Mel actually said it himself at his press conference. But I thought, you know, okay, so you've got Harlan Barnett as sort of, you know, the grizzled veteran, or however you want to say it, you know, the old wizard back there. And then it made sense to me to pair a young up-and-comer with him on the other end. So you kind of have every dynamic covered. Like, this guy's got all the experience over here. This guy's the young, energetic recruiter type over here. Put them together, and boom, you've got everything covered there. So in that sense, I was very surprised just that Salgado's somebody of his resume and experience would be the choice. You know, I mean, the guy hasn't recruited in college in 6-7 years or whatever, period. Hasn't recruited at the Power 5 level in over a decade. I believe since 08 at Syracuse was the last year there. You know, in Princeton, you know, there's a certain skill that it takes to recruit there too, because you have to get those kids into school and whatnot.
That's tough. Yeah,
but that's still you're not competing, you know, in the blood sport that is recruiting against the SEC, you know, or even just the top tier of the Big Ten. It's just a different deal. So in that sense, I was quite surprised, because I thought recruiting would probably be the top trait that Mel was looking for, you know, when that's the recruit every day mantra and so on and so forth. And that, you know, is a position that I think could use, quite honestly, some juice like that, you know, behind it. I think Tucker brings a lot on his own, but he's still the head coach. He still has a lot of other things going on. So when he's able to invest in DB recruiting, I think it's really effective. But how much time can he do that versus your position coach? You should be doing a lot of that. So we'll have to see. You know, I'm not saying he will not be a good recruiter. I don't know. I just thought they'd go with somebody who has a lot more recent proven experience. Now, that being said, he just came from the NFL, where he was on staff in a good franchise for quite a bit. And you don't, you know, the NFL, those guys don't suffer fools, right? Like, if you're a dummy, if you're a know-nothing, right, like, you don't hang around for multiple seasons the way he did.
Yeah.
So I do think that as much as maybe the recruiting part is an unknown, and look, I'm not even going to call it a concern, but it's an unknown, right, until he shows something, until he proves something. The part where I think MSU fans should be at least a little encouraged is it sounds like this guy's a really good teacher and like a very good technician of technique and scheme and fundamentals, things like that. Things that, as we all know, have been missing in the back defensive backfield this entire time under Mel Tucker, quite honestly, right? I mean, they just it hasn't been there. So maybe at this stage of the game, I just talked about development a little bit ago, right? Maybe that's exactly what they need to prioritize. It's just making the guys that we have better, maximizing what they can be, cleaning up all these little my bads, as Tom Izzo would say. It seems like we see a lot of those out there and hear a lot of those after games, you know. Maybe somebody that can just tighten the screws and clean up some of the technique issues, and just being a teacher is more important, maybe, than being this ace, you know, 22-year-old recruiter type of guy or whatever, 24, I guess I should say, something like that. But, you know, that's kind of my read on it. It wasn't the profile of the guy I expected, but maybe he's exactly the type of guy they need, you know, when you talk about just being an ace in the classroom, in the meeting room, on the practice field type of guy.
That's the spin zone I'm going to take as an MSU fan over here, is that, like, if there's one position on that field that could use, like, a teacher over just a recruiter, I think I'm going to go with the defensive backfield here after what we've seen the last few years. Speaking of recruiting, though, and, like, we're not going to get, like, too far into the weeds here. Again, you're coming fresh off a basketball season. Going to let you decompress and gather more information before we get really into the recruiting nitty-gritty. But I do think it is interesting that Brandon Jordan leaves. And obviously, you know, he was a guy that brought in a lot of visitors here. You know, got a lot of guys that came last June, July, also landed some of these kids. And he leaves the NFL, and we're thinking, well, there goes our shot with a lot of top flight recruits here moving forward. But that said, though, like, David Stone still visited not too long ago. Was Brandon Jordan, like, do we overrate him as a recruiter? I know that sounds ridiculous because clearly he had an impact here, but, like, can Michigan State defensive line recruiting survive without Brandon Jordan, I guess, is the long and short of this question here, highlighted by David Stone's recent visit.
Survive, yes. Thrive, I don't know. You know, okay. Yeah, as it turns out, you know, I think Brandon Jordan opened a lot of doors or got people through the door. He opened a lot of doors, opened pretty much every door, right? I mean, like, it's not like I'm an engineer who wasn't curious about working with him. So just his presence opened a lot of doors. But the more you hear and talk to some people, and it was a little bit of a damage control, absolutely, probably. But I also think there's a lot of truth in there, that he opened the door, but other folks pulled those kids through that door to, you know, to really show them around, to really get them familiar with the program. I'm not literally just saying on campus visit, but doing the legwork in the recruiting, making the relationships, making the in-home visits, talking to the parents, getting to know whoever is important in that kid's circle. So, yes and no. I mean, there's just no way that you're still going to get all the callbacks, all those open doors without them, you know, at least for now. Now, I do know that there's a lot of confidence in Byron Reynolds to be a very good recruiter here. Again, I think it's a little bit of TBD on him as well. I've talked, I believe, on here before about, I think his background is interesting. When you look at Stanford and how selective they have to be and all the different pockets of the country that he's had to go to try to, you know, just pick one or two guys out of, he then has a lot of relationships across the country. And the way it was explained to me was, like, just let him get settled in here. And with his resume and his personality, he's going to be doing, you know, he's going to be able to do damage on the recruiting trail for MSU. So I said, okay, I mean, we'll withhold judgment there. But the thing is, BT just gave them instant credibility. Like I said, every high-level guy wanted to work with him. If you hadn't heard of him, it took 2 seconds to go on his social media and see what he was all about. And the people who trusted him to work with him. And that just made Michigan State gave him at least a look, whether it was ever legitimate or it ever went beyond the look. But almost he could get a look from almost anybody. So that's irreplaceable. Can Byron Reynolds be a very good recruiter? Sure. Definitely. But I don't think he can go down the top, you know, and not to say our rankings are gospel or anything, but they're born. I don't think he could go through top to bottom and just get every kid, boom, you know, to turn their head immediately just by saying his name yet. So, you know, that's a really hard thing to do. So was he overrated? I would say no. But I don't think it's also the end of the world with him gone. But like that's where the pieces fit together, right? It's like he would get you the introduction. And then somebody else was really kind of pulling you through and signing, you know, getting you to closing day there. But without that introduction, it never goes anywhere to begin with, of course. So a little bit of chicken and the egg type of situation going on here, where that's pretty much how I see it. So I think it's still potentially in a good place. We just have to see it. But I would still say they're probably not going to be at that high level in terms of interest right away.
So not overrated, not end of the world. You're just asking us to be level-headed about this, rational about this. That's I'll try my best. I don't know about everyone else, but I can promise you my effort. The one thing about Dyer Reynolds too, and we don't have to get into this, but like it's just one thing I want to throw out there. Would have loved to see longer than a 1 year contract, because that's one thing you can preach to these kids is just the continuity of your coaching staff. And I think that's also why Mel didn't let anyone go on this staff. But I digress. We can get to that later and maybe they'll work something out later on. But one thing before I'll be let you go here, we're going to bookend this. We're going to start the conversation with basketball, end it with basketball. Super broad question for you, Steven. What is the number one storyline for you as we go into the waters of this offseason? Is it Malik Hall's decision? Is it Tyson Walker's decision? Is it who is going to make the rosters at Moneyball this summer? What's the big storyline for you moving forward?
It's easier. It's got to be both those guys, Hall and Walker, because they're the difference between a top 10 preseason team and a top three. You know, if both come back, there's another the number for me has been three. They're no lower than three. Now, I don't know who's bringing in what class at some of these blue bloods or whatever. That can always be a thing. You know, people get caught up in that hype. But if both those guys come back, no, they're no lower than three coming into next season. And then, you know, the expectations already are bubbling pretty high, I think, right now. But if both come back, I think Malik Hall is more likely at this point. I wouldn't rule out both, though. And that's just going to send the expectations into overdrive if both are back, because that's the perfect blend of seasoning and experience on the one end and then the high-level, high-ceiling young talent on the other. That's exactly what you want to be in this era of college basketball. So it's got to be waiting on the decisions of those two guys.
Simple as that. Any idea, any timeline for these guys? Have you heard anything like, this week or next week, or is it just all up in the air right now?
I have not heard anything. I would think they both want to take like a week or so to decompress and just be sure. You know, I'm sure they were both leaned one way that night, but they got to be honest with themselves and really, you know, vet it out from every angle. So I would think within a couple of weeks, maybe there's some sort of, you know, maybe one of them has a birthday coming up or something. They want to tie it into that, or their mom's birthday or something, you know, holiday. So maybe there's some occasion, their last day of class for the semester or something. I don't know. Maybe there's some occasion they want to hook it to as well. But I'll be trying to find out. So I hope to know sooner than later.
We all will. Yeah, seriously. Because our lives depend on it, Steven. Let's just put it bluntly here. I've put a lot of emotional stock into the decisions of these college kids in their early 20s. So the sooner they can make that decision, the better for everyone involved here. Steven, this has been awesome. Anything you want to plug here before we let you go and enjoy the rest of your week? Or it's up to you. Floor is yours right now.
Just go to Spartan Tailgate, sign up, become a VIP member. Can sign up for $1 right now. We'll have long-term specials going. But Spartan Tailgate, sign up as a VIP member. That's the best way to support me, Corey Robinson, Justin Thin, Sean Shearer, our whole team, Alan True, the whole network, all that. So if you like what we do, you like just hearing me here, and you want to throw something in my little tip jar, go sign up, be a VIP member, and that makes us all look good. So appreciate your time here, man. Appreciate you having me out.
Hey, appreciate all the listeners and the viewers as well. You guys are the best. Hey, keep it tuned 5 days a week here. Who needs an off season? Not us. Let's go. Love you all. Go Green.